Good on you, you sickos.
I hope that was the right Sting.
I think it was.
Yeah. It's not the new Sting yet.
It's not the new Sting.
The new Sting's still in development.
Well, we're working on it. As you know, James, things don't come very quickly on Clem's Wine Corner and Screaming Meals as a whole.
No.
It's a long time process.
I'll slide over the obvious joke there.
But let's face it, we've now got a pod kit back.
Yeah, we've actually got the podcast equipment back. You've probably noticed the difference in audio quality already.
Yeah, surprisingly different. Yeah.
Hey, welcome back. Episode 2, Season 3. 3 weeks late? Two weeks late?
3 weeks late or 2 weeks
late. 2 weeks late, I think it is. Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, yes, sorry. We've had a bit of a rough patch there. Quite a lot of work on the business.
Tell me, there's been a lot of work done. There's been maybe a little bit too much socializing.
On your part, over socializing.
All right, get fucked. And no, but we're back.
We are back.
We're back in business and better than ever. So, without further ado, should we introduce the wine?
We shall introduce the wine. Now, this is something that you've picked.
Yeah. Look. Okay. I'm gonna correct you there already. This is something that was in front of me when I opened a cupboard in the office, and I thought, "Hey, presto! This saves me a trip to Tesco," which rhymes.
Now. The only problem with this wine is that it's a Rioja.
I mean, that's not the only problem with this wine.
No.
I mean, the problems start there.
There are some very good Riojas out there.
Of course there are.
But I'm not a fan.
No, nor I.
But obviously we found
Do you remember when I almost assassinated Santi, our videographer in Barcelona, when he tried to order me a glass of Rioja? I almost had his head. I really did almost have his head. Yeah. He was in fatal danger.
Not good. But so now we've got a Campo Viejo. So obviously it's a Rioja, a Garnacha.
Can you give me a bit? I know it's going to be a bit shit, but can you give me a bit more actually?
About what?
Of the wine. You've shortchanged me on the glass
of
it.
Yeah, I was just giving you sort of a dabble. 2018 wine.
Mm-hmm. Quite a hot year.
Quite a hot year, actually. Mm. I'll read the blurb for you if there is a blurb. Bright, lively wine offers vibrant red fruit with hints of flowers and sweet spices.
If you haven't figured it out by the name, by the way, those UK listeners amongst you, this is that shit yellow labeled Rioja that you see in the supermarket and in office. Like it's just, this is your bog standard red wine, isn't it?
I wouldn't even go as far as red wine. I think it's your bog standard Rioja.
Yeah,
because I like to make a difference between the two.
Okay,
but
between red wine and Rioja,
should we have it on the nose?
Yeah, let's give it a fucking sniff, shall we?
Ooh,
yeah, I don't like that face.
This is
ooh. Mm.
How long has that been in the cupboard, do you reckon?
Well, it's not been opened, which I guess is a start, but I mean the
cork. Not a great drinking culture.
Look at the
here.
State of this cork.
Oh, that's not good.
It's rough, man.
That smells kind of corked. I'm not going to lie to you.
Now, the cork itself doesn't smell too bad. Mm. It really is a noseful, isn't it?
It's a noseful of shit, yeah.
Big old Wall Street night out.
Oh.
It smells industrial.
I could describe this in many ways. Most of them I'll refrain from.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a positive. It smells like duck shit. You know?
I was going to go more
it's not
like
massively
sort of
positive,
kerosene. You know, sort of like, you know when you're standing
chemical,
on the,
it's like a chemical poo, you know?
You're standing on the tarmac there at one of the budget airlines where you're not actually being... You know, you haven't quite got the lift straight from the aircraft.
Yeah.
You've got to go down.
No air bridge.
And you smell that
kerosene. The kerosene, yeah.
It smells like that.
Mm. It smells like boarding an EasyJet flight from Luton. It's about as sophisticated as that.
Somewhere, you know, out in the sticks. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, that happened to me on my EasyJet flight. We'll get to that, but should we get this on the Palais? And then I'll talk to you about my EasyJet flight.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I'm honestly procrastinating tasting it, to be perfectly honest. Here we go.
I don't even want to keep that in my mouth. You know, you're kind of just swallowing it very fast.
Do you know what? It's smoother than it smells. And I think that's probably, I mean, it's the most, generously describe it as drinkable.
I wouldn't even go that far.
No, look, I mean, it's very sweet and it's not very acidic. So you can see where the Brits like it.
Well, it's drinkable.
That's what I meant. Yeah, like it's...
It's not good.
No, quite. Yeah.
I wouldn't... particularly give that a very
high grade.
I'm
having a rough week, so I'm going to crack on. But
yeah, no, you can crack on, mate. James has been, you know, overflowed with work, quite the busy man.
Yeah.
Underflowed
with women.
Quite.
Yeah.
Overflowed with work, underflowed with female interactions, let's say.
How it always should be, you know.
And, you know, I'm going
to... Nice that things are getting back to normal.
I'm going to stick that as a... Is one of the low ones.
It's
down there. I'm going to go for a 2.
To be honest, I saw you going lower than that. I'm giving it... I'm going to go 1.7.
Wow. It's not often you find a wine... Obviously, when both of us taste a bad wine, we're pretty adamant that it's a shit wine.
It's aggressively bad, though.
But usually I'm quite aggressive on the notations when it's a low one. Mm. And you tend to be a bit more conservative.
I've also... I guess I probably have, like, an emotional stigma towards the wine. Because, I mean, this really is, like... If you want to feel like you're not being treated like you're special, watch someone pull out a bottle of this at a function.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, the amount of... shit glasses of this I've had over the last 7 years of my career, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It really rubs me up the wrong way.
Anyways, do you want to delve into your little adventures down south, going to Portugal?
Portugal. Oh, sure. Yes. I wasn't sure what you were meaning there. Yeah, no, well, I mean, there was a guy who had a few too many of these.
Was it this exact wine, was it?
No. Actually, I'm not even sure if it was wine, not even sure if it was alcohol.
More rugs.
And he boarded the plane, and this guy was just being a bit of a pain in the ass. So obviously, we're going down to the south of Portugal. Again, British people listening to this will know, like, that's just golf trip central, part of the world.
Oh, far
out. And so it's just
massively.
It's just geezers on their way to play golf, and obviously getting, you know.
Battered on the way.
What do they say? Bevied up in the airport.
That's the one, having that sort of Wetherspoons pint.
Bit of English lingo from me there. So he's all hooned. And you could see him, like, Mark, you know, acting up a little bit before we take off. You know, giving it some of that, you know, fist pumps or whatever.
Yeah, I'm just going to describe it to the listeners. You know, you're sort of sticking your arms in the air, sort of waving.
I think they know what fist pumps are. Yeah. And you identify that he's going to be a mongrel. You know, but let's hope he just calms down as the flight goes on. This is where I was in the back row, and the flight attendants were sort of there next to me. That's where we sort of began to suspect that it could have been more rug-induced than alcohol.
You're talking drugs?
Rugs, yeah. And, he just got worse and worse and worse. And then he, stood up in the middle of the aisle at one point, pointed at one of the lovely, real breath of fresh air, actually, one of the young flight attendants, and said, "I'm going to you." And that's when the pilot kind of said, "All right, we got to get this thing on the deck," you know.
Didn't he try to have a scrap with the pilot too?
He did try to have a scrap with the pilot. He came back. So we landed in Porto. We were obviously meant to be in
Faro.
Faro, which wrong end of the country, 560 miles in the wrong place. So we landed. This Dutch pilot, quite good looking actually. He definitely worked out. Lands the plane. He comes down to the back and he goes, "It's like, mate, I'm going to have to get you off the plane." This guy goes, "You're going to kick me off a fucking plane, aren't you?" So, like, of course I'm going to kick you off the plane. And anyway, this goes on for a couple of minutes. He goes, "Right, the police are next and they're not going to be as nice as I am." And then the police come on, the Portuguese police, and literally just take this guy. And I've thrown laundry into the fucking dryer with more class than the way they threw this guy down the stairs. They seriously hiffed him. It was great. Whole plane cheered. It was fantastic.
Great entertainment.
But that was about a month ago. I tell you what, that was about a month ago now.
I know.
Jeez, it's been a while. We've
been slacking off.
We have. Look, we're not known to be the best and most consistent podcasters.
No.
We got on a real run, though. Season 2 was really strong. And I'm hoping the second phase of season 3 can be just as.
Yeah, well, let's give it a go.
Yeah, obviously. Right. So we've covered off a 1.7 and a 2 on the wine. Should we go into some motorsports?
Should we go into some Formula 1?
Start at the top. Do it.
Start at Formula 1.
What do you got for me?
Brazil. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, what a race.
Great race. One of those
cracking races, I think, probably...
Like a Canada, almost.
Well, it's one of the best races I've ever watched.
Yeah, for sure.
Changeable conditions. What I liked is... And I think this comes to... I think everybody understands this, but I think that's one of the key things behind a good wet race is that it never... fully dries out and there's repeated showers. It's not constant rain.
Yeah.
It's not rain and then no rain towards the end of the race. It's one of those where you at one point you're thinking of going to slicks and then it starts pissing down again.
Yeah.
So you go back to your inters.
It's a very will they, won't they, isn't it?
Well, it's one of those number crunching
races. It's kind of like watching
races.
The Bachelor in motorsport. You know, it's like, oh, is it going to be Kyle? Oh, no, maybe she likes Sam a bit more. It's
one
bit,
of those.
Yeah.
And what a race by Max Verstappen.
I mean, it's been a couple of weeks now, right? Yeah. I'm genuinely struggling to find the words of how impressed I am by, like...
No, for me, it was... Honestly, I've watched, let's say, most Formula One races since probably 2007, 2008. Mm. I struggle to remember a race that was as explosive and where the difference between a driver and the rest of the field was so big.
Mm.
Like, he was just head, shoulders, and full body.
I like that.
Above everybody
one
else.
One of the Alpines, and I assume that it was Ocon, I think, came out and said, and quite rightly, when it rains, the car doesn't really matter so much.
Yeah.
It's kind of more down to the skill. It's a little bit of a reverse pat on the back. But I'm kind of thinking, Matt, if you want to throw that kind of statement out, and the cars are all the same and it's wet, you had your pants down by Max Verstappen to the tune of 20 seconds, you still beat everybody else.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you still weren't close.
Nah,
you know what I mean?
For sure. I mean, for me, one of the best statements was the engineer there of Leclerc coming on the radio. Because, obviously, Leclerc being stuck behind the two Alpines couldn't get past.
Mm.
And he came on the radio and said, maybe I should back off and go for fastest lap. And the honest answer from the engineer was, I don't think you want to know what the fastest lap actually is.
Don't ask questions you might not like the answer to.
Exactly.
I mean, there were some great statements all through the weekend, but I think it's a competition for second because the best of the weekend is Max going, hey, look, I know that I can't go word for word, but where's all the British press? Let's go to the airport or something. That was the best response. That was fantastic.
But that's the thing with Max. He doesn't mince his words, but at the same time, he's not an aggressive guy behind the microphone, let's say, anymore. He used to be back in the day, but he's a little bit less aggressive now.
Under the lid, sure.
Sarcastic, which is some type of humor that I really enjoy.
And actually something you don't get a lot of from the Dutch, come to think about it. The Dutch are, they're very matter-of-fact people, and if you try to use some sarcasm on a Dutchman, look out.
Yeah, because he might take you word for word.
Yeah, honestly, like the amount of times that I've been like, oh yeah, mate, I'll be there with bells on, and they'll be like, why would you show up with the bells? I don't understand. You come jingling, jaggling. It's weird. They don't get it.
They don't get it.
But no, Matt, great Dutchman, great driver.
Insane. I mean, yeah, head above everybody else. I think Lando blew it at the start. Because had he been in front of...
The sky's blue.
Nothing much has changed. I mean, to be fair, full respect to George, because he did get a mega start. I think off the start, they were both the same.
Yeah.
Then in that second phase, he just got the better of him.
I was going to text from HSBC. And to credit to George as well, I think he made the call on the radio to the team, don't bring me in. And I think he just followed the orders in the end. I'm pretty sure he made the call to stay out, but
he was a bit pissed off at the fact that...
You would be.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so would
I.
But yeah, he was pretty pissed off that he'd been called in.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously...
Especially when you're not even in the championship. You're just sniffing race wins at this point of the year if you're George Russell.
No, for sure. So you may as well give it a go and stay out. I don't think it would have changed much of Max's brilliance in that race. I think Max... Had there been no red flag, or had there been a red flag and both of the others hadn't changed their tyres, I still think he would have come through.
Oh, it was Senna reincarnated. It was ridiculous.
It was insane. I mean, it was kind of a repeat of that 2016 race where he overtook 15 cars in 16 laps.
Mm. But people have been talking about that since 2016.
And I think people will
and
be
this
talking
is more
about...
impressive.
Well, no, and I think people will be talking about this race.
Years and years and years and years.
Years. Yeah. It's one of those where probably when me and you sitting on a couch there, multi-billionaires with, the 1,700 businesses we'll have created over our lifetimes.
It does. 1,700 businesses sounds like a lot of admin.
It does sound like a lot of admin, but we'll be looking back on the on our time watching Formula One, and probably this race as being one of, if not the best, we saw in our life.
I often think that as well. I often remember thinking as a younger fan, jealous of the fact that my parents, actually, Dad loves a Grand Prix. So when he was living in London, they did a lot of the Grand Prix in the sort of 80s and 90s. And I was like, you got to see Senna. You actually got to see Senna.
The Prosts,
that's awesome.
The PKs,
and
all of those
guys. There's future Formula One fans who are about 2 or 3 years old right now who one day will kind of go, wow, you got to witness Verstappen.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no, for sure. And I think that that's one of the great things behind this this sort of, I wouldn't say dominance of Verstappen, but I think, you know, when it comes to the last 3 years, as dominant as the Red Bull car was, the feats that he did were extremely impressive.
Yeah.
And you can't take away from the fact that the car was very strong in 23.
Mm-hmm.
But Sergio Perez finished second in the championship, struggling.
Yeah.
He finished second.
He's not making a good argument for this point at the moment in his life, but he's not a shit driver. He's actually fast. He's a fast driver, Sergio Perez.
Oh, yeah. But he's in Formula One.
Got that job for a reason.
He's, yeah, exactly.
I think he's got it again, hasn't he? Isn't that just been announced?
Well, I don't think so.
I think it's been announced, but like...
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, it's been announced, but yeah. You know, there's a clause in that contract where I think Liam yeah. Lawson is like...
There'd be more clause in that contract than a fucking line, dude.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, and obviously Lawson, mega weekend.
Yeah, really strong again.
Did really strong. I think he's kind of telling Perez, I mean, they keep coming to scraps, which I find hilarious, but he's kind of telling him just
yeah, it is
keep
funny.
That seat warm for me, son.
Yeah, the letting Max through was a little bit more straightforward than letting Sergio through when it
came
to Liam.
I think we both understand why.
Oh, mate, and so you know what? Keir Kaha, Liam Lawson, fighting the good fight. Have you seen the headlines this week about he's calling McLaren bullshit for not using the New Zealand anthem? Fuck it, yes!
And you know what? That is coming straight from your brain because that is something that we discussed on the podcast.
Yeah, and he hadn't thought about it until then, you can tell.
Yeah, no.
I texted him at the week. I texted him on Saturday night, actually, when we were out. And I saw one of the headlines. I screenshotted it. I was like, yeah, fight the good fight, Matt. And you said, it's true. And I was like, yeah.
But, yeah, no, now looking ahead, Vegas.
Vegas.
Max can wrap it up. I mean, to be honest, between me and you.
Where would you rather wrap up a championship, Vegas or Qatar?
Probably Vegas. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's...
Even if he scores points in Vegas, would you just go like, we'll call it. Then just hope that Lando doesn't do pole and win the next two races.
Yeah, pretty much. He'll definitely have a big party, and I think a lot of people will have a big party. Vegas is a great party city.
Oh,
I mean,
fantastic.
I remember back
I was
in
almost
the day,
there myself quite recently.
I used to work on the casino floors, you see, back in the 90s, so the heyday.
Well, that's how we met, of course, because I was counting cards in there, and then you snapped me up.
Well,
basically.
I didn't snap you up straight away because, you see, you were very good and I couldn't quite understand the way you were doing your counting. Yep. And I really, it's that moment where I started installing cameras in a lot of casinos. Obviously,
but what you hadn't thought about were the electrodes in my underpants.
Was that how you were doing it?
Yeah. But I told you that.
No.
No, yeah, that's how I got away with it. So we struck up our relationship there in the early 90s, and then George Clooney came in and accused us of trying to steal everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a messy time. But Vegas all the same.
Great place.
What a spot.
A bit of F2 stuff as well. Obviously, Boganovic doing the last two rounds.
Yeah, well, graduates from
Formula F3.
3 to F2 and from F2 to F1 even. Bortoletto.
Well, of course. I mean, I was just going to go into the
F2
news
you were
and
lean
finish
up to
off
it, were
with
you?
The sort of F1 drama there on the seats and stuff.
But
Boganovic obviously doing the last two rounds. And Jackie Moon re-signing back with at Dams for one more
Dams.
Year.
Obviously likes the French.
Does. But yeah, no, F1 news. Bortoletto.
Gabino.
How good.
Oh, mate.
How good.
Like.
Yeah, I smiled that morning. I had a wee tear in my eye. Good friends, of course. And yeah, no, if there's one guy that deserves that seat, it's him.
Yeah, I was just, it's all gone so well. You know what I mean? You're like, you obviously know a little bit more than the rest of the world about the inner workings and what's been going on for the last, you know, little while there. But it's so funny because, you know, at the start of the year, you know, we're obviously at the age we are. I'm 27, you're 23. We've got a few friends. So it's sort of knocking on that door. But it's even if you're knocking, there's no guarantee that anybody's answering, man.
Yeah,
fuck it. But it's all coming together for the boys. Liam Lawson, Doohan, we got Bortoletto, we got fucking...
Behrman.
Yeah, Behrman.
It's great.
Yeah, with the harshest penalty of the weekend in Brazil, probably.
I mean, poor guy.
About congratulations, you played yourself.
that's one of those, yeah.
Yeah.
And then obviously, this is sort of something that I've heard in the inner workings. Something that, you know, a theory that I've developed, actually.
Oh, is this your football theory?
Well, it's not a football theory, but it's something that I think would make a lot of sense. Which is obviously Colapinto, megastar. Obviously a little bit more of a disappointment in Brazil, but it's never easy to drive a Formula One car in the wet, let alone if you've never actually driven it before and it's a race.
Yeah.
But yeah, he obviously, I think Williams really want to keep him on board. And
I think so.
See, if I was Red Bull, I'd sign him to the main seat. Right? Bear with me. I'd sign him to the main seat.
Yeah. Lose Perez. Yeah. Not Max.
No. No, Max is staying. And then what I'd do is I'd engineer sort of a swap there with Carlos Sainz to put Carlos Sainz in the Red Bull seat.
Because Sainz is going to be at Williams. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And then Williams get him, obviously for a lot less money than they'd be paying Sainz, but Williams still a strong driver.
Yeah.
And Red Bull has two really strong drivers.
Well, then, no, wouldn't you then have Red Bull pay Sainz's Williams salary?
Oh, no, yeah, for sure.
So you'd probably do that. You'd probably... So you'd sign Colapinto Pinto of your Red Bull, say, hey, here's a free seat.
Yeah.
But bit of a nudge, wink, wink. We're going to try and fire you pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then they go to Williams and they say, look, we'll pay Carlos's salary plus 10%.
Yeah.
To be fair. And we'll give you Colapinto back.
Yeah.
Or we'll loan you Colapinto back, I suppose, by that point.
Or just do a straight out swap.
Yeah.
It's one of those.
Because then, I mean, who's won that one?
Who's won that one? I think Red both Bull. Of them won. No, objectively, both of them.
Yeah, to be fair, because Williams aren't out of pocket if Red Bull's paying the
salary.
The Sainz salary.
Colapinto is going to cost a lot less to Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Red Bull gets...
He's also got...
Two strong drivers.
I would almost say that Colapinto could be arguably more marketable than Sainz.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially in South America.
100%.
Then you go Carlos Sainz, obviously...
Back to Red Bull.
Strong driver.
Yep.
Max and him didn't really get along back in the day, but they've moved
really?
On, you know. Yeah, back 7 years ago, they weren't great friends.
Oh, really? I did not get that impression.
But, no, obviously two very strong
I guess
drivers.
When you're both in the AlphaTauri, look at me, the Toro Rosso back there. I've really adapted, haven't I?
Yeah. It's now a V-Cub.
Oh, fuck. Well, give me 4 more years and I'll be on it with the whatever the fuck they're called. And I've lost my train of thought. No, when you're in that team, it's hard to be friends with your teammate because you are still, that's basically Formula 2 in Formula 1.
Yeah, you're trying to fight for that Red Bull seat. So in the end, but yeah, no, so I think that would actually be, and then Carlos Sainz stays in a car where he realistically can
keep
fight
winning
for
races.
Wins.
Yeah.
And so I think as a whole, it's a pretty damn good.
Good win.
Good win for win.
I like that. Maybe consult the deal. Maybe we could sort of massage it through, you know.
Oh, well.
Because that's kind of what Bradley Cooper did in that movie, Limitless, right? He was essentially just a merger.
Yeah, merger genius. Yeah.
Yeah.
Massaging it all.
Took a nice fee. Fuck yeah, I'd take a fee on that.
So would I, mate.
Yeah.
Anything Formula One you touch is gold, mate.
Yeah, until it's not.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But
I mean, where does that put us?
I think that puts us straight into crisis.
Straight room. Into a crisis. Okay.
Should we?
My love life.
Step into the crisis room.
Yep. Is that the right step?
No, I think this is the real.
Is this the applause?
I think this is the applause.
Oh shit!
Oh, don't mean
to do that. Oh no, fuck! We've got two of them going on. Yeah, turn the applause off. This is going to be really punishing. It's still going.
No, it's gone.
It's got a flashing light, and that's going to bum.
Yeah, I know, but I've turned the volume down.
Yeah, okay, but let's just. All right.
No, because you've just turned it back on.
Have I?
Yeah, but don't worry. So your love life.
Is that what we're doing in crisis control, is it?
Nah.
No, is it? Oh, mate, I'm not embarrassed about it. Well,
we've got a special crisis close to your
Scottish
heart.
Ski results. Yeah, the fact that I got ghosted after a month doesn't really matter. In
the grand scheme of things,
though. No, it really doesn't matter now, does it? So there's a Scottish ski resort that's really on its last legs. Okay, so we're fighting for survival, just like James. Amid a climate crisis.
Climate crisis.
Ski Center has pushed back its winter season until next year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that pushed back or is that cancelled?
I think it's cancelled this year.
Yeah. Due to the effects of climate change, Stanley's decision is about cutting back, but about fighting for survival. Or it's not about cutting back, but it's about fighting for survival. So, but here's the thing. It's a ski resort in Scotland.
I'm going to tell you the first thing that comes to mind. It's in Scotland.
Yeah.
Location, location, location.
Yeah, 100%.
It's the most important thing in any sort of real estate deal. Now, obviously,
Nevis
speaking
range.
Through my many years of working in New York real estate, the first thing you got to think about is location.
Mm.
Now, why would you open a ski resort in Scotland?
Yeah, you may as well open one. And
have you ever heard of somebody going, I'm off on a ski holiday. Let me just pop up to Scotland.
Oh, do you know what the best part about skiing is? Is when you wake up in the morning, you have your porridge and you do. No, no one's ever said that.
Or what's the thing where it's all fried?
Haggis. Scotland. Yeah, sorry, right. Yeah, haggis. Yeah,
I'm
correct.
Off to get my haggis.
Yeah.
And then pop down the slope. So I think that's the
problem. It's a weird cultural mix, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't think skiing quite fits the whole.
So if you want to survive, I mean, how do you keep a ski resort in Scotland up and running? Which every time I say it out loud sounds more and more ridiculous.
Well,
but
I think, you see, now the biggest problem, and this is going back to my construction background as well, obviously, as that real estate stuff and so on. You want to make something cooler.
Okay.
Better.
You sound like Marcus.
You got to make it bigger.
Okay, right. You're sounding less like Marcus.
So what you got to do, well, it's like when you're building a tower. You want to make it more impressive, just build it taller.
Yeah.
Now,
I can kind of see where you're going.
Get where the gist is. I would basically get some massive diggers, right? Massive diggers. Take all of the mountains of Scotland, make it flat in just one big mountain. Now, why? Two things. Firstly, you're closer to the, you're higher up in the air. So
okay, so we essentially turn the rest of the Scottish Highlands into a borderline snooker table.
That's the one.
And then there's just one big old Burj Khalifa spec mountain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, you can make it as tall as Mount Everest if you want.
Okay,
which,
right.
Awesome.
Instantly, altitude sickness. Not great when you're skiing.
No worries.
I don't want to be skiing with a fucking oxygen tank strapped to my fucking camel pack.
Let me tell you the thing, though. You're only up there for 5 minutes. You're going down. You're going down, not up. So it's not going to get any worse. Once you reach the top, it's only going to get better.
Yeah, once you're feeling a bit woozy from the altitude sickness, it'll give a nice kind of buzz halfway down the slope. You know?
Exactly. It's one of those.
And so then, you chop her up there. Okay, so
No, you get yourself like one of them
big
ski lifts.
Gondola.
Yeah, big gondola. You can even make the gondola oxygen tanked, like so that you've got your oxygen in the gondola. And when you open the door,
it's just, you just vacuum.
But anyways, you're higher up, so naturally it's colder, more snow, right? So you ain't got that climate change problem anymore.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I think the fact that it's the tallest mountain in the world would be marketable.
Would you ski Everest?
Yeah.
I guess I would.
Well, no,
to say I've skied Everest, but
I wouldn't ski Everest, but I wouldn't make the mountain as sort of, how do you say, steep as Everest. See, because the thing is, you're using all that free earth, so you kind of shape the mountain the way you want it
to. Well, no, I'm more thinking about, like, would you go skiing in Nepal just to say that you skied on Everest?
I think you could, yeah.
No, but would you?
Probably.
Would you?
Imagine turning around, that'd be a great cocktail conversation. Hey, you know what I did last week? Went skiing on Mount Everest.
Yeah, it's quite cool. You know what I did last week? Went skiing in Scotland. You know what I mean? It's a different vibe.
It's true, it's true.
So you've got that to combat.
Well, no, yeah, of course. But I think the marketing aspect of it being the new tallest mountain in the world would change that.
So I think the competition still poses a significant threat. The French Alps, the Swiss Alps, you know, everything.
Yeah. How would you delve into that problem? Yeah, go for
it. So here's what I'm thinking, right? So if you, I mean, you frequent some of the Swiss ski resorts in the wintertime.
I do.
What would you say the majority of nationality in there, not French, would be?
Very mixed, actually.
Really? And Switzerland, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
a pricey.
A lot of Brits.
Yeah, that's where I'm going with this. Ban the English. Ban them. Ban them forever from Scotland in general, but from the ski resort in Scotland. So if you're this ski resort in Scotland and you can put on your marketing ploy, no English people allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in Scotland is going to want to go there for a start. Everyone from around Europe who have got their own resorts that have been colonized essentially by the British Empire, they can fuck off to Scotland as well, where there's no British people, you know, drinking their ridiculous cheap beers in the airport and getting thrown off flights in Porto.
That's not a bad idea, actually.
Mm.
And come to think of it, I thought of another marketing ploy.
Okay.
No open.
Dudes. All right. So what?
Open a massive brewery on the mountain. So like that, when you're halfway down the ski, the slope, stop off there, get your skis off.
You probably want it at the bottom because you'd still be operating a certain degree of altitude sickness around about halfway. So you'd probably want to down the bottom, and then you probably wouldn't want to hit that brewery before you go up, because then if you're gassed and then you hit into a no oxygen environment, that could be potentially problematic.
No, put it this way. I mean, you enter the brewery, you'll sign sort of a...
This wine is so shit, by the way.
It's terrible. Yeah. Once you enter the brewery, you just sign off a sort of...
like a waiver.
A waiver. So yeah. You know...
Actually, they should do that in pubs generally. You should have to sign a waiver to go into a pub in this country. Some of the shit you see.
But anyway, so to sum up, how we're going to sort it out.
Yeah. Okay. There's going to be a ban on English people.
Ban on English
people. We're going to cultivate the entirety of Scotland and turn it into one big, not like quite gently...
Gently sloping into large a massive mountain.
Yeah.
We need to find a new name.
Nevis? I quite like Nevis.
Mount Nevis.
That's literally the name of the resort.
Mount Nevis.
Yeah, so there's no work to do on the name.
Yeah, no work to do
Excellent.
On the name.
We can
and open a massive piss-up brewery in the middle.
Yeah.
I think we've solved it.
I think so. I mean, kind of games and things like that. I really like skiing in America, where they've got like the mechanical bull kind of thing going on. Like, it's all that kind of thing.
Oh, well, this is just sort of side stuff.
I mean, yeah, we're dressing now. But
and obviously, yeah. Massive mountain.
I think that works, mate. Yeah, so yeah, if we flatten Scotland and we ban English people from the country,
and just yeah,
I mean, skiing's gonna thrive. To be honest, the whole Scottish economy could thrive if you banned English people from Scotland. Honestly, it might become one of the top holiday destinations in the world.
And if you also, you know, all the minerals that you're going to dig up whilst trying to build a mountain.
Oh, absolutely.
It'll be like the it'll be the new UAE.
Mazepin's dad does that kind of thing, doesn't he? He does this sort of ground mineral thing, Earl Kim.
I don't know.
I'm sure he might know somebody. We can drop him a text. We can run the Scottish plan by him.
Tickety-boo.
He's probably got a bit of cash, actually, as well, for the operation.
But anyways.
Anyway, moving on to the end of the podcast.
I think that's it,
I think that's a solved crisis. That's that we've talked about racing. We've talked about wine. We've talked about my catastrophic failure of a love life.
Yeah.
We've nailed it. Season 3, here we go.
Single life, eh?
Yeah, it's great.
See you later, you backbones.